right now, there is nearly $1 trillion in commercial real estate debt just kind of hurtling toward a maturity wall. And this is in a high interest rate environment, which is wild.
Yeah, it's a massive number. I mean, by all traditional metrics, we should be seeing a nationwide panic.
Exactly. But if you look closely at the retail sector, and specifically in Dallas-Fort Worth, you aren't seeing panic. You're actually seeing absolute record-breaking dominance.
It's completely counterintuitive.
It really is. So welcome to our deep dive into the commercial real estate landscape.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're analyzing a massive stack of industry reports from March 5th through the 13th, 2026.
And the contrast in the data this week is just stark. We're looking at a market that is deeply bifurcated, where macro and economic anxiety is colliding directly with incredible property-level resilience in very specific geographic pockets.
Right, which is exactly why we're breaking this down for you today. Mm-hmm. Because whether you're an investor looking to deploy capital, or a landlord, or, you know, a tenant trying to secure square footage, navigating this environment requires extreme precision.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is why this analysis is brought to you by Eureka Business Group. They are the premier authority and the foremost commercial real estate brokers specializing in retail in the DFW market. Because as the data will show, generic national strategies simply do not work in DFW, right?
No, they really don't. You need localized expertise.
For sure. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the macro reality.
Yeah. Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, to understand the premium being placed on retail right now, you really have to understand the financial gravity weighing down the broader CRE market. Like, the February Consumer Price Index print just came in.
Right. And headline inflation is sitting at 2.4% year over year, right?
Yeah.
With core TPI at 2.5.
Exactly. Which is technically in line with expectations, but it cements that narrative we've been tracking.
The Federal Reserve remaining firmly on hold.
Yeah, they're keeping the federal funds rate between 3.50 and 3.75%.
And the implications of that higher for longer environment are, I mean, they're finally breaking the traditional refinancing models.
Oh, they're shattering them. When you look at the commercial mortgage-backed securities market, the CMBS special servicing rate just hit 11.1%.
Wow. Over 11%.
Yeah, we are nearing distress levels not seen since the aftermath of the global financial crisis. And the office sector is leading that downward pull with a staggering 15.8% distress rate.
Let's explore the mechanism behind that distress for a second, because we have approximately $875 billion in commercial mortgage balances set to mature in 2026 alone.
That is a terrifying number for a lot of operators.
It is, because many of those loans were originated, you know, 5 to 10 years ago in a low rate environment. So when a borrower goes to refinance today, the debt service coverage ratio requirements are much stricter and the cost of capital is substantially higher.
Right. So unless the property's net operating income has basically doubled over the hold period, there's a massive equity gap.
And that equity gap is forcing distressed sales, right? Handing keys back to lenders across the office sector.
It is. But that same underlying mathematical reality is creating a really fascinating behavioral shift among capital providers.
How so?
Well, lenders aren't abandoning commercial real estate entirely. They are just reallocating risk. CRE Daily reports that banks are actually tiptoeing back into the lending space, but they're doing it specifically for retail assets.
That's amazing. I mean, the underlying cash flows in retail are proving robust enough to support these higher debt service requirements. Retail is effectively acting like the Teflon of the commercial real estate world right now.
The Teflon of CRE. I like that. And it's so true.
It's just a complete reversal from the narratives we saw a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, the industry spent a decade predicting the retail apocalypse, assuming e-commerce would render physical storefronts obsolete.
Well, everyone thought malls were dead.
Right. But now, in 2026, retail is the darling of the debt markets.
Because the sector survived its crucible, you know. The weak retail concepts and the over-leveraged malls, they were purged from the system years ago.
That makes sense.
The operators left standing today are highly disciplined, they're battle-tested, and they've successfully integrated their digital supply chains with their physical footprints. So they are absorbing these macroeconomic shocks far better than office or multifamily assets right now.
And you can actually see that absorption in how the market handles major disruptions. Mm. Like, look at the national retail shakeup happening right now with Saks Global.
Yeah, the Chapter 11 restructuring.
Exactly. They just announced the closure of 15 more full-line stores. So that's 12 Saks Fifth Avenue locations and 3 Neiman Marcus spots. and they're shutting down almost all 60 of their Saks OFF 5TH discount locations.
Which is huge. And a traditional reading of that news would suggest the retail sector is, you know, contracting.
Right, because, wait, how is losing a massive anchor tenant like a Saks Fifth Avenue ever a good thing for a landlord? Doesn't that trigger co-tenancy clauses that allow all the smaller inline stores in the mall to legally demand rent reductions or even just break their leases?
You would think so. The immediate assumption is that a bankruptcy of this magnitude would devastate a landlord's rent roll.
Right.
And the co-tenancy risk is absolutely a real legal mechanism, but the current supply and demand dynamics are just overriding it completely.
Really? How are they avoiding the penalties?
Glossed actually published a report this week showing that second-generation retail space, which is exactly the spaces Saks is vacating, has become an incredibly hot commodity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, landlords are not panicking about co-tenancy clauses because the demand for these empty boxes is entirely keeping pace with the closures. They're re-tenanting the spaces so quickly that the co-tenancy penalties rarely even have time to materialize.
Okay, that makes sense. It acts almost like a forest fire that clears the canopy.
That's a great analogy.
Right, because these massive legacy department stores have been sitting on some of the most premium supply-constrained real estate in the country for decades. And they're often paying well below market rent on these old 30-year legacy leases. So when they finally go under, it burns off the old growth. It allows dynamic, modern tenants paying current market rates to finally grab that prime square footage.
And the financial upside for landlords who successfully subdivide and release these anchor boxes is substantial. Plus, the tenants moving in are entirely different from the legacy department stores.
Who's taking the space?
Experiential brands and value-driven retailers who actually understand the modern consumer. Target, for example, just announced a multi-year turnaround plan featuring a $5 billion capital investment specifically for 2026.
$5 billion allocated to physical retail in a single year.
In a single year. They're plotting over 30 new store openings and more than 130 major remodels. And a significant portion of this capital is funding new in-store beauty studios rolling out across 600 locations this fall.
See, that highlights a crucial shift in retail strategy. Because in the past, retailers viewed e-commerce as their primary growth engine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But digital customer acquisition costs have just skyrocketed over the last few years due to privacy changes and saturated ad markets.
Oh, it's so expensive to acquire a customer online now.
So physical stores, especially experiential ones like Target's Beauty Studios, are now functioning as the most cost-effective customer acquisition channels available. I mean, you cannot replicate the tactile experience of testing cosmetics through a screen.
You really can't. And the strategy of utilizing physical space to lower customer acquisition costs, it's prevalent across multiple demographics now. Like, Lego is aggressively expanding its physical U.S. footprint after reporting record sales.
Nice.
And the Wall Street Journal noted a surprising demographic trend this week, too. Gen Z is returning to physical malls in massive numbers.
Wait, the generation that grew up as digital natives is driving brick-and-mortar foot traffic.
I know, it's wild, but the Placer.ai mobility data confirms it. U.S. mall traffic grew significantly year-over-year in February. Because digital spaces are so saturated and monetized, younger demographics are seeking out physical third places for social interaction.
That's fascinating. Physical retail centers are evolving from pure transactional hubs into primary social infrastructure.
Exactly. But the transactional side is still generating massive investor appetite, particularly in essential goods. JLL's 2026 Grocery Tracker report just dropped, and grocery-anchored centers are currently notching the highest occupancy rates in the country.
Oh, absolutely.
Investor demand for grocery-anchored retail is driving a 42% surge in transaction volumes for these specific assets. Institutional capital views them as the ultimate inflation hedge, because regardless of consumer sentiment, grocery sales remain stable.
And the mechanism there relies on foot traffic bleed over, right?
Yeah.
A high-performing grocery anchor generates consistent multi-day-a-week visits. That reliable consumer volume justifies higher rents for the inline tenants, you know, the dry cleaners, quick service restaurants, fitness boutiques,
right,
which compresses the capitalization rate for the entire shopping center.
Yeah, that dynamic is playing out nationally, but the metrics become exponential when we examine the state of Texas.
Which brings us to the core of this week's analysis. If retail is insulating the national market, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is operating on an entirely different level.
A completely different universe.
And this is exactly where the localized expertise of Eureka Business Group becomes critical for our listeners.
Well, the data from Weitzman's latest market breakdown illustrates the disparity perfectly. The DFW retail market has just achieved record overall occupancy for the third consecutive year.
That is insane. Three consecutive years of record occupancy is not a statistical anomaly. It indicates a fundamental structural shift in the market's supply and demand equilibrium.
It is a structural reality across the entire Texas Triangle. Houston, Austin, and San Antonio are exhibiting similar performance metrics.
Right.
CRE Daily attributes this near full occupancy to two colliding macroeconomic forces. You have explosive, sustained population migration into Texas, coupled with a severe, prolonged lack of new small shop retail construction.
This constrained environment transforms the DFW retail market into a velvet rope club. You cannot execute a generic corporate expansion strategy here. Occupancy is so tight that prime spaces never even hit the open market.
Nope, they're gone before a sign goes up.
Exactly. If you're a tenant trying to expand your footprint, you're essentially standing outside the club while the bouncer tells you they are at capacity. You need the insider who already knows the bouncer, who knows which lease is expiring in 6 months before the landlord even lists it.
And that naturally reinforces why partnering with specialized local experts like Eureka Business Group is vital. They provide the access required to bypass that velvet rope.
Absolutely.
And the underlying mechanics creating that velvet rope effect, they're rooted in the capital markets. We discussed the 11.1% special servicing rate and the cost of debt earlier, right?
Yeah.
Well, financing ground-up retail development today requires debt yields that are incredibly difficult to underwrite. When you factor in the inflated costs of construction materials and labor, a developer needs to charge unprecedented top-of-the-market rents just to break even on a new build.
And most small shop tenants just cannot underwrite those $60 or $70 per square foot rents into their operating models.
Right. Therefore, new construction just grinds to a halt. And when you combine zero new inventory with relentless corporate and population relocation into DFW, it hands landlords immense pricing power.
For sure.
Rent growth is accelerating, but tenants who secure the space are actually willing to pay the premium because the sheer volume of consumer foot traffic guarantees strong top-line revenue.
That perfectly illustrates the desperation for premium acreage we are seeing in the transaction data. Like, look at the HEB development in Buda, Texas, which is situated in that hyper-growth corridor between Austin and San Antonio.
Oh, the landfill project.
Yeah. They are currently rehabilitating a former landfill to build an expanded store.
Which is wild. Undertaking massive environmental remediation is typically a deal killer in commercial real estate. I mean, the liability and the capital expenditure are usually just way too high.
Right. But if the pro forma makes sense, even with millions of dollars in environmental cleanup factored in, it shows exactly how constrained this market is.
Exactly.
The cost of remediation is now lower than the premium of acquiring non-existent clean acreage in that specific high-density corridor. Retailers will literally clean up a toxic site if it guarantees access to the Texas consumer base.
And institutional investors are following that exact same logic. We're seeing major retail centers trade hands at significant valuations as capital from out of state seeks yield in Texas.
What are some recent examples?
Well, Fidelis Realty Partners recently acquired Baybrook Village. That's a 279,000 square foot shopping center in Webster, heavily anchored by national tenants.
Wow, that's a massive footprint.
Yeah, and down in the Rio Grande Valley, a major center called Palms Crossing in McAllen just sold to out-of-state investors for $82 million.
$82 million, wow. But consumer demand is really only half the equation, right? Because you can have all the foot traffic in the world and consumers are eager to spend. But if you do not have the logistics network to restock the shelves, your high occupancy rate doesn't even matter.
No, it falls apart entirely.
Retail requires a massive synchronized ecosystem to function. So how is DFW handling the supply side of this equation?
Well, what's fascinating here is that the infrastructure supporting this retail dominance is seeing parallel capital inflows. Let's examine the logistics sector. Affinius Capital just originated a $94.5 million loan for Black Mountain's acquisition of Chisholm 20.
A nearly $100 million loan in a constricted debt market. That speaks volumes about lender conviction in DFW logistics.
It really does. Chisholm 20 is a 917,000 square foot Class A industrial facility in Fort Worth. The fact that capital of that magnitude is flowing into DFW logistics highlights the insatiable demand for localized fulfillment nodes.
Because every single product sold in those record occupancy DFW retail stores has to move through a facility like Chisholm 21st.
Exactly.
The modern consumer expects seamless omnichannel fulfillment. You know, buy online, pick up in store, or next day delivery. So a booming retail sector demands a hyper-efficient supply chain. The industrial market strength in DFW is the structural backbone ensuring the retail sector can actually restock fast enough to meet the velocity of consumer demand.
Right, and the ecosystem also relies heavily on importing outside capital to continually stimulate the local economy. You can't solely rely on circulating the same resident dollars over and over.
So where is that outside capital coming from?
That is where the hospitality and convention sectors provide critical support. Dallas investor Ray Washburn has formally proposed an $800 million hotel development near the Dallas Convention Center.
Securing financing for an $800 million hospitality project right now, that requires incredibly complex underwriting, probably involving a blend of private equity and municipal tax incentives.
Definitely. The project is designed as a 30-story, 1,000-room tower. Washburn acquired the site, which is the former Dallas Morning News campus, back in 2019, and the timing of this development is highly strategic.
How so?
It's designed to coincide perfectly with the city's planned $3.7 billion overhaul of the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center.
Oh, wow. When you synthesize those municipal and private developments, the economic feedback loop becomes very clear. I mean, the industrial sector ensures physical goods reach the retail shelves efficiently. Meanwhile, a modernized $3.7 billion convention center paired with an $800 million flagship hotel imports millions of out-of-state business travelers.
Right.
And those travelers bring corporate expense accounts directly into DFW's retail and dining registers, injecting fresh capital into the local ecosystem on a continuous basis.
And the confidence in this market's trajectory is even reflecting in the highest levels of commercial real estate corporate strategy.
What are we seeing there?
We're seeing massive consolidation in the capital market sector. Savills, the London-based real estate advisory firm, just reached an agreement to acquire Eastdil Secured for $1.2 billion.
Eastdil Secured. They're one of the most prominent players in North American real estate investment banking.
Yeah.
An acquisition of that size is a massive strategic play.
It functions as a leading indicator. When a firm like Savills allocates $1.2 billion to acquire a major U.S. capital markets advisor, it signals that the smartest institutional money expects the current bid-ask spread to narrow.
Right.
They are preparing for a massive wave of high-volume transaction activity, particularly as we move closer to the 2026 maturity wall and assets are literally forced to trade hands. They're scaling up their infrastructure right now to capture the fees on the upcoming wave of capital deployment.
That makes perfect sense. So let's pull all of these threads together for you. If you are casually reading national commercial real estate headlines, you're inundated with anxiety, right? You see an $875 billion maturity wall, an office sector struggling with a 15.8% distress rate, and a Federal Reserve holding rates at 3.50 to 3.75%.
It looks grim on paper.
It does. But when you analyze the localized fundamentals in Texas, and specifically the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, you uncover an entirely different economic reality. You have national operators like Target investing billions into physical customer acquisition channels.
Mm.
You have second-generation retail space being absorbed instantaneously. You have DFW maintaining record-high retail occupancy for three consecutive years. And supporting it all, you have massive institutional capital funding, million-square-foot logistics hubs, and billion-dollar convention infrastructure to keep the ecosystem thriving.
It's a completely self-sustaining engine.
Exactly. This is a market moving aggressively forward, defying the national macroeconomic gravity. And that brings us back to our sponsor, Eureka Business Group. Because in a market this constrained, where occupancy is at historic highs and new construction is functionally frozen, the cost of making a strategic error is magnified.
Oh, one mistake could set a tenant back years.
Right. You need a partner who understands the underlying financial mechanics and possesses the local relationships to access off-market opportunities. Navigating DFW retail requires Eureka Business Group. So looking at all this data, what does this all mean moving forward?
Well, it means we are approaching a critical supply-side threshold. With DFW retail occupancy at record highs for three consecutive years and virtually zero new construction breaking ground, look at what happens when current 5 to 10 year retail leases expire.
That's a good point.
We've talked extensively about the immense pricing power landlords hold today, but the real question you should be asking yourself is, what happens to the DFW economy when localized independent retailers are entirely priced out of the Metroplex upon renewal?
Leaving only the massive national conglomerates who can afford the newly inflated rents.
Exactly. It is a structural shift in the tenant mix that will fundamentally reshape the community. It's definitely something to keep an eye on.